Valley with Tony Simpson, Ryan Champion and Jack Bennion.
Hello everyone, welcome to Absolute Rally. Have you missed us? We've had 2 weeks off. We've been not quite sunning ourselves. Some of us have been working, some of us haven't. I'm not going to cast aspersions at anyone, but some of this week's podcast was done last week. That's all I'm going to say. So I was still working. What were you doing, Jack Bennion?
Well, I have a day job. So yeah, I was in the office putting a paper together.
Putting a paper together. All right. Making aeroplanes or?
No. Okay. Actual paper.
Okay, and obviously we wish you a belated happy birthday for yesterday. There you go.
Thank you very much. It's not a bad present to be heading to GB, so yeah.
I thought you were going to say for being on this podcast then, but all right, it's fine, I'll take that. And of course, normally when we've got that man there, we've got the other man there, which is Ryan Champion. Hello, Ryan Champion.
Hello. How are we?
We're all right. As I said, what did you do with your 2 weeks off, right?
Well, I do have a day job some days. It just varies by the days to what the job is, that's all. So, various stuff, nothing particularly interesting, no exotic destinations. But, busy with one thing or another.
That's in a couple of weeks, isn't it?
It is. There's a little holiday coming up, yeah.
When do you go away?
You know full well I go on holiday a week on Sunday.
There you go. Jack, are you going on holiday a week on Sunday?
I was going on holiday.
I wish I was going on holiday as well.
To be fair, I'm actually going on holiday before that because I'm going to spend 2 days in Mid Wales next week. So, that's obviously a holiday, isn't it? Not making it there this weekend, so I'm making up for it next week.
Yeah, you didn't book your holidays in the Absolute Rally holiday is the point I'm trying to make there. You're obviously going to need a note of some sort to excuse you for being absent for a week.
Yeah, that's fine. I'll just do it from another destination.
Oh, how good's that? How good's that? Yeah, okay, let's do that. Anyway, folks, welcome back. It is season 6, episode 1. We thought we'd do something a little bit different this week. I'm in danger of being very, very parochial because I'm going to do a special podcast on Wales Rally GB. It's a very, very special rally for lots of people across the world. And I thought it'd be quite nice to get friends of the show and guests and things like that to kind of give us their favourite moments, memories, whether it be from watching or competing and stuff like that. We've got some belting stories coming up from our various guests and from spectating through to competing on it through to securing championships on it. So I'll say no more about that because I kind of quite like the idea of letting you listen to it and you're not knowing who's coming up. Obviously, you know, Jack and Ben are there. Jack and Benyon's there and Ryan Champion's there. I don't even know who Jack and Ben is.
That was Bill and Ben in your time, when you were little.
Plowpot man. Hey, you're the same age as me. Leave it out, Ryan Champion.
That's before my time.
Yeah, all right, fine. We know we've got these two boys who are going to share their thoughts of their favourite moments of Wales Rally GB. So, Jack Bennion, it's all probably a lot more... A lot closer to you because you're a relatively young man, of course, despite your recent birthday compared to Ryan and myself. But what were your favourite and probably first moments of Wales Rally GB?
I think probably my favourite memory of GB would be to go back to start. And anyone who's heard me talk about sort of the history of rallying on this podcast, I know that 1994 is a very special year to me. It was it was my first memory of rallying properly, actually, as my dad had the WRC review on tape. And obviously, that year, Didier Auriol was quite dominant in the Celica GT4, and he was fighting for the championship on GB, and it links into this year quite nicely actually, because his closest challenger that year in the Subaru was Carlos Sainz after Colin McRae had a bit of a troublesome year with a lot of crashes and a lot of unreliability, and Sainz went off in Pan-Perthog, I think it was on the last day. But it was definitely in Pan-Perthog, and that's a stage that returns to the rally this year, which hasn't been on since the late 90s, I don't think. So it'll be nice to see that stage back. Unfortunately, it's not a spectator stage, but it's a stage that I know a lot of the drivers are looking forward to, I've spoken to this week. But yeah, it was a place where Didier Auriol sealed his first and only world championship in 1994. So that's one memory that does strike me quite nicely, actually, watching that with my dad on VHS.
It was around the WRC that year, wasn't it?
It was.
I always think, what was the year that Armand Schwartz won it?
96.
That was. Yeah, with the snow.
Sorry, I realised that when I said that almost as a rhetorical question there, I had the two statos that were just itching to tell me what the date was.
I did say Didier Auriol sealed the championship there, so it must have been around the WRC, wasn't it?
That's a bit of a giveaway, Jack, but you know, it washes over him.
Handbags. Hey, where's this all come from? I'll tell you what,
I'm just pointing out, Tony.
Fine, okay. If that's how it's going to be, Jack Bennion, that's how it's going to be. Ryan Champion, you've got various memories, I'm guessing, from both competing, from doing Car Zero to working on it to doing TV on it. Where do you go for your memories?
Yeah, I suppose you have more angles than I thought when you just reminded me there. But actually, mine come back to spectating, really, either spectating or in a service crew. I mean, my first memory goes back to 1980, the year a young Henry Toivonen won the rally in a Talbot Sunbeam Lotus. My family were Talbot dealers that year, and actually Talbot serviced in our workshop on a road section between I think it was Gisborough and Cropton stages that year. So that was really my first memory. And then it goes through to 85 when my mum did it, co-driving for Chris Birkbeck, when it was, you know, 60 odd stage marathon. And you know, like, it's been remember being in the chase car and been down at the start in Nottingham. But I guess my favourite memory again is spectating on the event. I was spectating with a young man at the time called Justin Dale, and we followed the 95 RAC round and followed it to its finish in Chester when Colin won the World Championship. And you know, remember being there as Tony Mason was interviewing him in the grandstand, and he dropped the top off the trophy and did the donuts and all those things that have become iconic images later on. And as much as it's been fantastic to actually compete on the rally, to do course car, as you said, I mean, yeah, my golden memories, if you like, come from being around the event, spectating or like I say, in a service vehicle rather than actually competing, I think.
Jack, does that surprise you? And it kind of half surprises me and half doesn't, that somebody who's done Rally GB numerous times in numerous cars, still their kind of most favoured memories is watching it.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? But I think it's difficult to know, not being a proper competitor myself, that, you know, I think it'd be difficult to know how it feels to do GB, because it must be a real labour of love. But, you know, sometimes you must wish you've never started. I guess you both have had that feeling at some point. But yeah, I think when you speak to a lot of drivers, a lot of their favourite memories are spectating. I think that's one of the things that sets rallying aside from a lot of other motorsports, that the people who do it, the competitors, are in most cases connected to the grassroots, and they love to go out spectating and watching. And I've seen many videos this week on social media of people, drivers at a national level and at an international level, going to watch tests and putting up videos on Facebook and stuff like that from some of the pre-event tests we've seen. So, you know, I think there's a real sort of involvement from people at the top and at the bottom, and it all sort of comes together with spectating.
I think I've got kind of, and you guys will probably remember the dates better than me, because I've got a couple, really. And the very first rally I went to was an RAC rally, which was the year it went through, ironically, not too far from where I'm sat as I record this podcast, in Knowsley Safari Park. And it was the year that the wheel came off.
off Nicholas Quattro?
Yeah. Can you remember it?
I think it was 1981.
I think. I was
going to say 80, but yeah, definitely the first couple of years of the 80s, isn't it?
No, it wasn't 80, because that was pre-Quattro. That, like I said, that was the Toivonen year. So I think it was 81. And I actually remember going to Cropton Forest that year and watching Jean Ragnotti was doing the rally in a yellow and black R5 turbo. And I remember that. And also, I think that was the last time a Lancia Stratos ever did the RAC rally in the hands of Marco Alen. In a pale blue Chardonnay Stratos.
Well, I don't remember that much detail. I just remember seeing the car. It went through the because it was kind of the stately home stage, because Knowsley Hall is a fantastic space and everything else. And I can remember being there. Say I would have been 7-8 years old. And that was my first kind of memory and thought that this is amazing. And then for years, not kind of being in a city that, and it's fair to say, embraces rallying, I found it really difficult to go to rallies, to find people to take me to rallies and stuff like that as a small child. So probably not too dissimilar to what Jack was describing, is getting the VHS tapes and recording Top Gear Rally Report. And I've still got Top Gear rally report on VHS tape, still in my mum's, from probably 86, 85, 87. You know, all those years where I'd record, and they're probably, how they're still together and not worn out is beyond me, because I watched them. I could watch them now and take you through what is actually said at every given moment of those tapes. And that's kind of how it kind of grabbed me. And then being lucky enough to go and do it, Jack, I think you hit the nail on the head. You know, the first year I did it, I can remember, and it's not that long ago, obviously it's only 3 or 4 years ago, but you know, we had no breaks for an entire day. And literally just driving on the gearbox and just thinking, why have I done this? This is just pointless. And you know, then you get to the end of it and you go, okay, the satisfaction of actually getting a car around, and managing situations, which, you know, I think, what people tend to forget, even the guys doing the national events, it's still a big step up from them. You know, I equated the mileage to preparing the car to do 5 BTRDA national events back to back. And that's how I used to prepare the car. That's the way you've kind of got to think of it. You are doing 5 national rallies over 3 days. And, you know, I think that catches some people out sometimes. I think sometimes you don't realize what they're perhaps getting into. And, you know, it definitely is a marathon, not a sprint. I think at certainly at clubman level, probably a little bit different these days for the top boys, where they see them as sprints now. But I think definitely for the likes of us, it was definitely still a marathon event. But still, there you go. Jack, what are your plans for Rally GB? What are you going to be up to?
I've got quite a busy week planned, actually. As you alluded to earlier, it was my birthday, so I'm heading up to Chester, which is where I'm from, and I'm going to spend the week up here. Wednesday night, I'm going to head to the Rally Forum organised by Broughton and Brett Motor Club and Brimall Pierce. Craig Breen and Malcolm Wilson confirmed for that, so it should be quite good. And I know that's one Ryan's attended in the past. And then Thursday, obviously the ceremony starts in the evening, so I'll probably head to that. And then Friday, I'll be out most of the day with David Evans, and Saturday, I'll probably be out most of Saturday as well. And then Sunday, likely be a service park day while we pull the reports together.
Good man. Well, we will be over there. I think Ryan's up on Wednesday evening as well, so you'll be able to talk about me.
Oh no, we wouldn't do that without you. Well, we might.
Well, not much anyway. But right, is this the first year perhaps you've not been directly involved with the rally for a while? Is that fair to say?
Probably is for the first time for a couple of years. Yeah. It'll be strange watching it from a distance, but I guess nowadays with you know, with the internet and with all the midpoint times and all the rest of it, you can keep up with the rally very well at home. So it'll be a different way to keep in touch with it, but I'll certainly be seeing what's going on.
Fantastic. Well, listen, as I said at the top, this is a very different program. We're not doing news, we're not doing headlines and things like that this week. We are purely immersing ourselves in Wales Rally GB, and we've got some fantastic guests, both new and old, who are going to be sharing their favourite memories, thoughts and experiences of Rally GB as we know it, and possibly how it once was as well, which I know Ryan just alluded to there, how it was once. And all I'll say is that I'm going to tell you one guest that we've got Julian Porter, and he has got a cracking story. Look forward to it. Sit back, relax, enjoy the podcast, folks. If you do enjoy it, please share the love, let everybody know, especially people who are freezing the bits off watching Wales Rally GB. What better could you be doing listening to our podcast while you're waiting for the rally cars to come through? Anyway, sit back, relax, enjoy our guests, and I'll catch you at the end of the programme.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate, call Dane or Donna now on 441904 766787, or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
And then our little feature with regards to Wales Rally GB and our favourite moments. I thought I'd get somebody who'd done it not once, not twice, but I don't know how many times he's done it, and neither did he. And he's going to tell us this now. Guy Wilkes, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thanks very much. And to answer your question is, I'm still counting. I had to rush back to the office, type in EWRC and see how many times I've done it in the positions, because I could have quite easily told you a story, but it would have probably been factually incorrect.
Now, I've got it. I think I remember your first year. I think your first year was the first year that you were in the Puma. I think it was 2002, the year after Foot and Mouth.
Yeah, you've been on EWRC, haven't you?
I haven't. No, do you know what? Right, this sounds really weird, this, right? But I remember, because the 2002 was the year after Foot and Mouth. And it was the first year back in BRC where we had a proper BRC. You were in the Puma Super 1600. I was doing the Polo Challenge, and there was the KAs, and there was the 206s as well. So I kind of remember all the rallies that year, who was doing them, probably more so than probably 2 years ago, if you know what I mean. And I remember the Puma. I had a thing for the Puma. So the fact you were driving one, I was massively envious. Puma. I had a thing.
But you're exactly right. I mean, that was my first year, and in the situation of Puma, I remember we had a whole host of issues. We were going quite well. It was obviously a junior world championship round back in those days. And we were going fairly well. I remember coming off Riola, and we had a problem, I seem to remember, with the alternator, but it caused us a lot of time in the stage, and maybe even a water pump. I'm sure that we actually went out after Riola with the water pump, now that I think about it. But I'm just looking here, and it says that we finished 29th and 8th in class A6. So, yeah, I know that we definitely didn't finish that year. But
that's not obviously not one of your, that's not one of your more favourite memories, I'm guessing, from doing the rally.
No. Yeah, I suppose. Well, yeah, actually, no, I'm looking at the wrong year. We're both wrong, actually. We're both wrong. It was 2002. Sorry, you were right. I did finish that year. It was a year after 2003 when it was a junior world championship round. I did. It was water pump. So I didn't finish that year. The year after, 2004... it was again junior world championship, and the pressure was on. And talking about junior world championships in Suzuki, for me it's a massive mix of emotions, because some absolutely fantastic times, great highs, but a couple of massive lows, if not three massive lows, missing out on world championships. But nevertheless, this was really Wales Rally GB. Was not the penultimate round. There was actually two rounds after that, Sardinia and Catalonia. So Wales Rally GB was quite early on in the year that year. And it was really, really quite dry. It was September-ish from memory. But we had a fantastic win, myself and Phil, in the Suzuki Ignis. And it kind of teed up, then Sardinia. We went to Sardinia and finished second, and then obviously had the accident in Spain, one of our two accidents in Spain, the second one being the more famous one. But so Wales Rally GB, the first sort of real memory was, winning an international category at Wales Rally GB on a rally that I'd stood and watched, I'd say, all over the country, mainly around my home in the northeast, Hampstead Forest Kielder, when it was the old rally, the RAC rally. To see it progress and then get back into rally car and actually win, an FIA championship category was just absolutely fantastic on your home soil, and especially not even more so for Phil, but even equally for Phil, obviously being Welsh, to do it, and being on the top step of the podium in Cardiff was, it's fantastic memories. Moving on, though, I think, we did Wales Rally GB a few times. We're talking about highs, aren't we? So I can't mention the next two times in the
you can mention whatever you want, mate. But I'm trying to build you up. I'm trying to give. It's trying to be happy moments. But if you want to take us to some dark moments,
we'll end on a crescendo. Then we'll end on a crescendo. Okay. I'll get to it. So 05 again. I'm looking here. It wasn't Junior World Championship. We were developing the Swift that year, and we were doing a lot of rallies, myself and PG. We had a problem with the car. So moving on to 06 again, this was the last round of the Junior World Championship. I was leading the rally. We're having a big battle with Chris, and I think Chris hit a rock at the start of halfway. I think it was, or somewhere around there, those stages up on Epping. We were in touching distance, as we usually were. We were just fighting over tenths of seconds, usually not so much seconds. As soon as Chris had done that, we were in the lead of the rally. All we had to do was finish in the top three. The next stage was halfway. We were going across halfway, smelt gear oil. Basically, the differential had come to bits and sawed itself in half. We lost all drive at the end of the stage, could go no further, lost another world championship. So, quickly moving on, then we went 07. Now, this was probably, again, one of those moments when you sort of needed to get something, or I needed to get it off my back, a monkey off my back, so to speak. And obviously, it was British Championship, but Wales ITP was PWRC round. So, not only were we having a stonking fight with Mark Higgins, we were basically up against all the fastest drivers in the Production World Championship who were competing regularly in that championship. So there was a lot of bragging rights up for stake, but first and foremost, Phil and I were focused on winning the British rounds, which were split in two. I don't know if you remember, because you do have a good memory, the very first night, which was one round, we lost our Lamport on the very last stage up at Walters Arena, and we only won the round. We lost shed loads of time. I remember speaking to Patrick Flodden, because he'd gone off backwards just after the Walters Arena section, and he was backwards in the ditch, just scrambled back on the road, and we were catching him at this point, but I just lost my light pod over the jump and in the Walters Arena section. So I thought, great, we're catching a car, I can follow him to the finish. I know we had 50-odd seconds over Gwyndaff in second after one day, maybe close to a minute. So I thought, I can follow him to the finish, I'm fine here, because it's Patrick Flodden, he should be going quick. How have we caught him? Anyway, he pulled over and let us pass, and I said to Phil, I can't see anything. Anyway, I pulled over and let him back past, but he didn't come back past, so I'm waving my arm out the window, open the door. He comes along, draws up alongside, and he said, I can't see anything. I said, what's your problem? I've got no lights. So he said, oh, my window, the window's fogged up. And then he didn't want to go, so I just rammed it into first gear and just shot off. Basically, we drove the rest of the stage with one corner fog light and the side lights, basically. And we won the round by 0.7 of a second.
Wow.
Coming off that stage was very hairy. And I mean, if you ask Phil Pugh about coming off that stage, he could not see anything because I was just sat lower. I was just watching the side of the road because I didn't have any distance. And I always get them mixed up. Is that Riola or Resolving going with Walters Arena?
It's Resolving. I'm sure it's Resolving.
Okay, well, we know which one we're talking about. Down the end of that, it's really, really fast, and it's notorious for big accidents at the end. But I remember with this one fog light, I just threw the car sideways. It's all, if you're in a five-speed car, it's just flat out, basically. You've got big lefts and right sweepers, and it tightens up the last one to the left, and you go into a hairpin right. And I just remember seeing the flashing of reflective coats in the trees because we got slightly out of sequence, as you could probably allow us to be with only that amount of illumination. And I didn't panic. I just threw the car sideways. I thought, we're either going off or I don't want to go off. Yeah, so we got down, won that round by 0.7. Then, obviously, that was only the first day. That was only Friday. So Saturday, Sunday was another round, and away we went again. But, we came off that rally, won the British Championship, obviously the first major championship that I won, and beat everybody in PWRC convincingly, you know, the real top drivers at the time. And, it was just a stonking result for ourselves and Mitsubishi. And to be stood on the top step with a team around you like that and win a championship was a fantastic feeling.
Fair play. Now, I've got to ask you, just we're going slightly off subject here a little bit, but you mentioned the battle with Mark Higgins there. Were you shocked to see Mark come back on the final round of BRC this year in that R5 Fiesta?
Shocked by Mark Higgins? Never. to see what sponsors he had on the side of the car, shocked again, never. But I did. I had a little laugh with somebody, and I said, "He's nicking the kids' sponsors again." I saw Palaforce, and then I know they used to sponsor one of the young guys.
Yeah.
And I had a little chuckle with that with somebody who's a good friend with him. But I wasn't necessarily surprised, but obviously he more or less replaced Max Fatman, didn't he? I think in the car.
Yeah, well,
did Max do the last round?
Max hadn't been out. I think he only did the opening round. That car was sat. The reason why I ask is obviously you and Mark had a classic ding dong battle that year. You won the championship, and I'm sure it's the boring question that you always get asked. You've been doing a bit of RX. Does rally still run through the veins? Could someone still tempt you out?
Don't start me.
Okay. All right. Fine.
Yeah. It's rally. Rally is my absolute heart. Too competitive, I'd probably say, and my biggest problem is I can't do it for fun. I enjoy it massively, but what I enjoy massively is the buzz of being on that knife edge of going fast to win, to achieve, you know, racing for glory. And it's actually easier and it suits my lifestyle more because I know there's no opportunity for me in rallying. I'd have to get out there and prove something again, quite rightly so. Rallycross, I know I've got the pace. I've been helping Jeremy develop the mini a little bit and done a couple of other rounds. But for me, I fully believe, and I've shown the pace I can get there in the mini, which has got a lot less to be drawn out of it, to be honest. Rallying is still right there in my heart. And sometimes I have to distance myself from it because it's not that it doesn't hurt me, but, you know, a lot of the guys that I'm still in touch with, they're obviously driving at the top level. You know, Andreas and obviously Juho has been just announced that he's back in with Toyota and all driving at the top two in the bill. All those guys, Sebastian OJ, whenever I see them, we always have a great crack and good camaraderie, and they know exactly who I am, what I was capable of at the time. Those guys have been in the car, you know, for 4 or 5 years now, solidly, no doubt. I have full respect to the pace and where it is. I'd love to have a crack and see if I could get close to it again, even on a test. Rallycross this back end of the year, I had a good opportunity with my sponsor, Loco Energy Drinks, and it's really kicked my backside, to be honest. Started training again and got fit, lost a fair bit of weight. But I haven't been in rallycar for a long time, and sitting and listening to pace notes, it's almost like I'm doubting, sound like I'm doubting myself now, where the pace notes will actually sink in my brain, but I haven't listened to them for a long time, but I'm sure I could get back into it. I'd love to have a go, especially in the cars that they're getting next year. But just in something, just for somebody to put a marker down on a test road and say, right, okay, come on then, guy. See if Phil would get back in a car. See if I could get close to that marker of a current driver. I'd love to have that opportunity.
That might
just start the fire going again.
Sorry, mate. Apologise to the wife me at this point.
No, you don't have to apologise.
Yeah. Do you still get a bit texty around GB? Does GB still have that effect on you?
No. I've got to admit, no.
Okay.
It doesn't. I think it's because I've removed myself from it for quite a while, whereas for a couple of years after, I used to watch the results coming through from the stage ends. I was always on my phone. I think and being having family now as well, I have two girls, and I love to do things with them on a weekend. I mean, you know, the nature of the business I have, it's outdoor activity business with go-karts, off-road buggies, and all kinds of things. We're generally busy on weekends, so the weekends I get off, which are more and more, I'm pushing myself because, I have to, otherwise I wouldn't see them baby at school and I'd be at work. So, you know, yeah, it's like Crofts on this weekend. Would I love to be there? Yes, I would, but I'd also love to be with the kids on the bikes in the Lake District or the coast with them doing things, you know. Never going to get this time back, and I suppose that comes back to my competitive nature. If I can't be there, even helping somebody, if somebody said, can you come and help me drive a coach? Can you help me with setup of a car? If I haven't got a role to play, it's not that I'm not interested. I'd just rather be doing something that is constructive. For Wales Rally GB, do I get the buzz around this time of year? No, I don't. Would I love to do it? Yes, I would, but only if everything was right.
Yeah. That sounds.
And then I would definitely get the buzz.
Yeah, that sounds. You know, that was a Ryan Champion kind of response. That obviously Ryan would be with us at the top of the podcast. And you know, I always kind of nudge him and say, I know you get the super. He did track rod the other week in that Mitzi Wheel car, and he's like a man who's reinvented himself He's got Giddy again. I know. So we'll see. He's trying to be sensible, but I think it was that thing you were talking about. Well, somebody put me in a car again, and I think it was the fact that. Okay, it was a BTRDA rally, but he wasn't that far off the pace, and I think that's why kind of where he went. Okay.
I tell you what. The one thing was that really got me stirring and got my fire burning again. I went to Goodwood Festival of Speed. Let me think what year it was. It was 2014, and I went to give a good friend Rob Gill a hand and coaching some sponsors and attending some sponsors in a group of Mitsubishi of Steve Petcher, which wasn't. Top spec car at all, and the stage was set up its longest length I've ever seen it, and we were having a real good crack, and anyway it started to get competitive, and Danny Sordo was there, so I was having a bit of crack with Danny, and I started pushing it and really pushing it, and we got within 1 point something seconds of Danny, and we were second fastest, faster than all the R5 cars, and I Rob Gill, because obviously he writes The Sun, was supposed to sit in with Danny Sordo. He'd been invited as a guest of Hyundai, but he couldn't do it for the commitments. And he said to me, he said, look, I haven't told him I can't do it yet, but you just turn up. He said, I'll tell him just before, and you can go for a ride with Danny. And I said, would you like to, or is it a bit boring? I said, no, I'd love to. So I just turn up in the service area, and Danny's like, no, I'm not taking you for a ride. And do you know what? It was nice. It was lovely. He was lovely. The mutual respect he had. Then he said to me, he said, you can drive this car fast around here than me. Now I see what Danny Sordo did on the gravel at the weekend in Spain. Yeah. That's what lights the fire. So it is. It's one of those things that it will never leave me. And I suppose you always question yourself. But, you know, it's just bringing it together. Those guys are there, still there for a reason, because obviously they're doing a good job. And to have pace is one thing. To have pace consistently and finish those rides in those top positions, I think I'd actually be better for age. Now I think I'm probably quite a different person. But, you know, especially from my middle career, 05s, 06s, and Junior World Championship. But, yeah, I'd love another crack at it, but I'm a realist and know that the opportunities are very, very slim.
Absolutely. Listen, Guy Wilkes, thank you so much for joining us. For your good and bad memories, you gave us both. You gave us the bitter and the sweet on that. But your good
that
and bad memories.
Before.
Absolutely. Couldn't have put it better myself on Wales Rally GB. Guy, we'll catch up again soon.
Thanks very much. Cheers.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast, Wales Rally GB Special.
And we're in this little feature that I wanted to kind of do before GB, is kind of get people from around the sport and who've flirted with the sport, who've been involved with the sport, and perhaps even some people now are on the dark side. When I say the dark side, I mean the roundy stuff, but there's lots of rally people there as well. And he was a man who was the voice of European rallying on Eurosport. He's now is the man. Of course, of the World Rally Cross coverage. Andrew Coley, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Thanks, Tony, very much. I have to argue with you. We're not quite on the dark side. Obviously, we still drive on the gravel on purpose. But yeah, you're right. It's roundy. But it's great fun. I like there's still the word rally in it. And I still do occasionally appear on Eurosport doing the ERC coverage. But yeah, thank you very much for having me on as I'm from the other side.
No. Listen, we know you. We know deep down. We know if we burrow down, we'll find rally in your DNA. So that's all right. We're all right with that. But no, it's been a great year. Before we come to what we're going to do, it's been a great year for you guys, hasn't it, doing World Rallycross and obviously the European Rallycross as well, which kind of runs in conjunction with it.
Yeah, it has. Yeah, the series continues to grow and continues to be great fun. You know, the additions this year of people like Sebastian Loeb and Ken Block have had a massive impact on the reach of the championship. And it's just been great to see them, you know, there in the paddock. Like, wow, Sebastian Loeb, you know, and he also didn't come in and smash it. It took him until his 10th event, and actually reminded Petter recently that it actually took Petter until his 10th event as well to win. So it's not the easiest thing to win, even if you are a superstar name, and it's great to welcome those kind of guys along, and as they see the series continue to grow.
Well, we all did see, because, you know, there's massive crossovers. We, you know, our fans are your fans, and your fans are our fans, and stuff like that. But there was a nice picture, of course, of you sharing a glass with said Loeb and said Solberg the other week. What was that all about?
That was so we had a new event. Basically, we wanted to do a kind of an evening with kind of event for some invited media, basically at Esther in the second to last round of the World Rallycross Championship. And for the first event, we invited Solberg and Loeb along. The idea was we didn't have the cameras on, you know, we weren't recording things as such, and we just had a nice chat with these guys about their history, you know, when they became aware of each other, what it was like, the old battles in the WRC, and then what it was like for Solberg. You know, I said to him, is it nice to have Seb back, or is it a nightmare? And, you know, Seb had just won the last round of the World Rallycross Championship. But, you know, they genuinely enjoy competing against each other. And asking as well, you know, do they still enjoy this? They've done it for such a long time, and they both do. There's a fire inside them that makes them want to compete. And it's great to have them both in the World Rallycross Championship. So it was a bit of a dream for me, obviously, sitting having a beer with Sebastian Loeb and Petter Solberg. If he'd asked me if I'd be doing that even 5 years ago, I'd have said absolutely not. So, yeah, I'm a very lucky boy.
good man. Now, we're leading up to Wales Rally GB, and it's one that, you know, I know obviously you were rallying when I was rallying and things like that, and we all aspire to do this rally, of course. Now, obviously, those two guys have done it, and both of them have won it. But what's your favourite moment from GB?
I've got a few, really, Tony. From being a teenager, going and competing with my teenager. Actually, I might have been 20, showbiz age. Either way, going up and spectating with my dad and my then co-driver. You know, the mid-90s, sort of 95, 96, when it was proper Group A cars that, you know, that needed sending, needed chucking about. And I loved that. We often used to go to things like the Mickey Mouse stages, but, you know, because they were easy to go and spectate at and you could do a few in a day. And then occasionally up to places like Pundershaw. So, I mean, I remember, you know, I've got great memories of McRae and Science and Co. at Chatsworth with the water splash and the famous shots of, you know, bits of the Subarus flying off the front. We went to Pundershaw 1 year and it was so snowy that there were just spectator cars off everywhere in ditches. You know, somehow Dad got the Ford of Ryan in, but there were so many cars blocking the roads that we couldn't actually get to the stage. We stood, you know, agonisingly close, listening to bah, bah, bang, bang in the forest, and we couldn't get to it, so we had to bail from that. As we're heading out the stage, we were going down this long, very long straight road with a series of crests in it, and Dad just said to me, he said, I don't know who's behind us, but he's motoring on. And we looked out the back window to this set of headlights. You know, bearing in mind, it's a sort of snowy, icy road coming down flat out behind us. Get down to the T-junction. It's Harry Robinpera in the Seat Ibiza, S2 car, which again was another one of my favourites. That might have been 96, I guess. That was the snowy year, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was.
I think Schwartz won, and it was a round of the S2 series, if I remember correctly. But I went a few times. It was great, you know, being there and looking at this. And this would have, you know, this was early days for me in terms of my aspiration to compete. I didn't start until a couple of years later, but I absolutely loved it. And then later on, so my now wife, I took to see Rally GB in 2001.
You're all romantic. You're all romantic.
I know. Yeah, I added my now wife because she's still with me despite being dragged to a travel lodge at 5 o'clock in the morning into a Welsh forest, but. She liked Carlos Sainz. I was obviously a massive McRae and Burns fan, and it was the sort of championship fight year between Burns and McRae. It was the year of the big crash, and there were two stages either side of a road, and we went and stood on the inside of a 90 left, and we were so close. And you know, bearing in mind, it's the first rally my wife's been to see, and we're on the inside of a 90 left at World Championship event. Yeah, you know, you could look them in the eye. You could see that point at which they chuck the rear right down the ditch, send it over the apex, you know, with a load of opposite lock on and light it up. And it was brilliant. You know, it was absolutely brilliant. We then left that stage and walked as quickly as we could over to the following stage. And the following stage, this was the one that McRae shunted on. And we were waiting for him to come through, and he didn't. Him and Nicky Crisp walked down the road to the junction we were stood at with a couple of hundred fans carrying their crash helmets. And the fans just broke out into a round of applause. There was just this big round of applause as they walked down the road. Yeah, obviously we knew it was over. We knew the championship was over. But it was great. And it actually makes me shiver a bit thinking about it. It was amazing, amazing. I remember someone shouted out, at least you'll be home in time for Coronation Street, which I don't think either McRae or Chris was over the moon about. And we walked up the road. Literally, it was the next corner back down the stage was the one where the focus was, and it was there. You know, just completely and utterly flat down on the roll cage on every single panel. And you've all seen the footage from that, and also from one of the previous stages. Saint Gwynoe is my favourite onboard ever. If you've never seen it, McCrae and Chris, Saint Gwynoe, 2001. Onboard is the best onboard you'll find online, in my opinion. I've got one last memory for you, Tony, if you've got time.
Yeah, go on, of course.
I worked for 22 Motorsport in 2002. Actually, I was driving their Seat Ibiza in the National Gravel Rally Championship the year before. And that year, 2002, it was brilliant. It was the year that Hirvonen did his first event, I think, in a World Rally car. He might have done a Welsh event as a warm-up, but this was his first World Rally Championship event. It was the yellow battery energy drink Subaru Impreza S6. It was a stunner. I think it was the first one of the S6s not to be in the working squad, to be in a satellite team with 22 Motorsport. And I was there, writing stuff for their website, basically, which I was looking after at the time, as well as being with the team. And Petter won his first World Championship event there at Rally GB. And it was my first taste of behind the scenes. You know, there I was in Subaru's area as Petter and Phil Mills stood on the bonnet and sprayed the champagne. I've got the photos. I'll tweet it the week before Rally GB, if I can find it on my computer. It was brilliant being there with them on the bonnet. I was like, wow, you know, how lucky am I to be so close to this? And of course, you know, many years later, I'm still very lucky to be so close to this. Well, I didn't even know Petter then, and now I've had a beer with him. So full circle.
Fantastic. You know what? And it is, I think you've just hit the nail on the head, is that sometimes it's so nice to, I'm genuinely looking forward to, this is the first year I've not competed on GB or been involved in GB for 4 years. And it feels really odd not doing it, but I actually kind of went, I'm actually really looking forward now to being a fan again.
Just going and watching. Yeah,
going to do my thing and enjoy it kind of the way I used to enjoy it, you know, before it becomes work and it becomes your life and everything else, you know, like those memories, as you say, it is lovely to be in the trust circle and stuff with certain teams and things like that. But there's a lovely innocence about just going to watch it for truly what it is.
Yeah, very much, very much. And, you know, sometimes when you're at the event and you're having to make notes and you're trying to keep up with everything that's going on, you're trying to see as many drivers as you can, there's just a bit of you that thinks, actually, I'd just like to stand here and just watch it. And I feel the same way sometimes about, you know, videoing it and taking photos. We all want photos and videos from it, but sometimes you've got to put the phone down and just watch. You know, just get in amongst it and just watch.
You've just reminded me, right, I've still got pictures from that 2000... No, it would have been actually, it was well before. It would have been 1998, and I have still got a Max Spielman, and I hope they'll give us some money for advertising. Max Spielman, which was a photo lab over here in the UK where you go and take your film out your camera. I know there's probably listeners that have no appreciation to this concept at all. Yeah. And I have still got the package with 30 shots in and no word of a lie, and I will find them and I will tweet one of them after this podcast gone out just to prove a point. But I have not got a single shot where I've got the whole car in the photograph at all. I've got rear bumpers, I've got front wing, I've got a door. I have completely and utterly just was not quick enough, and I was just trying to do it on like an instant camera type thing, and I just didn't nail it at all. So I gave up taking photographs of rally cars back then. But no, I completely get it. It's a bit like when you go to a gig or you go to a concert and stuff and you see everyone with the phone, like, just enjoy it.
Get out there in the forest and enjoy it. It's a brilliant sport to watch. There's nothing better than being there when it's quiet and you can just hear the birds and stuff, and then you in the distance you just hear that bang, you know, the sound of anti-lag, and just, you know, oh, wonderful, wonderful. It's all become a bit too refined now. I like the old anti-lag that sounded like a shotgun, you know, but it's much less noisy. When McRae used to come past, you know, the mid-90s Imprezas, it made your ears ring, it was so loud. But you know, it's all become a bit more refined, but it's still special to hear that car in the distance and wait for it and try and anticipate how fast it is, and you never quite anticipate how quick it is when it appears. So yeah, enjoy it if you're going to watch.
Absolutely. Andrew Coley, thank you for your memories of Wales Rally GB. And I don't know who we're going to have next, but stay tuned, folks. And that's it on next person who has got their favourite memories of Wales Rally GB.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
And our next little guest, and I don't mean that in a height size in any way, shape or form, but our next guest in this little feature that we're doing with regards to getting ready for Wales Rally GB is a man that I seen on his very first Wales Rally GB as a competitor, and I've known him for years anyway, but I always remember him glowing at the prospect of doing his first Wales Rally GB, and he's getting ready to do his it'll be his fourth one I think now, but he's currently reigning ERC two-wheel drive champion. Welcome back to Absolute Rally, Chris Ingram.
Thanks, Tony. Great to be back, and not long to go, so
I know it's countdown now. Is this your fourth GB?
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Right, I got that right. Now, I remember you doing your first one. It was in the Twingo, and you were glowing. You were so excited. You were like a kid in a sweet shop. Do you still get that feeling, getting ready to do your home WRC round, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. There's nothing better. Like, obviously, it's been so serious this year, competing in the ERC. But to come back and do GB, it's not, because you're not fighting for a championship. It's a lot more about enjoyment, but yeah. Really looking forward to it, and the Adam's probably the best rally car I've driven, so can't wait to get it singing and dancing on the stages.
Fantastic. Now, everybody in this little section has been talking about their favourite memories, whether it is a driver or as a co-driver or as a, you know, from the TV side or purely as a rally fan. What's your favourite GB memory, Chris?
When I did it in the 208 with Peugeot UK back in winning the class, that was pretty special because, you know, when you see OG at the start and you get to have a little chat with him, and it's just pretty crazy. And then he, you know, just to get on those stages, and there's nothing, I'm speechless even thinking about it. But yeah, to drive it when I was growing up as a kid, first time I went to GB was watching McRae and the Fabia, and then, you know, seeing Loeb, and then to just get the chance to drive, it's nothing better. Sound like a bit of a fanboy, but it's true.
No, mate, listen, we're all fans, and funny enough, Andrew Coley and I were talking about this when we were talking in his little section, and we were saying, I'm not doing it. First time I've not done it, I actually worked on the event for 4 or 5 years, I think it is, and I'm actually genuinely looking forward to going back and just being a rally fan, to be honest with you, and just kind of taking it all in and enjoying it for what it is.
Yeah, definitely. It's really nice. These days, I don't like spectating at all, so I probably couldn't be a fan again because it's just torture seeing, you know, my rivals competing and doing it. So that's why you've got to keep getting stuck into it.
Absolutely. But you say that the first year you went was when Colin was in the Fabia. So that was, I'm trying to think what year that was. I've got my mind just gone blank on that.
2003 or 2004, I think.
Yeah, it would have been, wouldn't it? It would have been, wouldn't it? So
I was about nine. I didn't really know much about rallying, but I was just mesmerised by it.
And was that the first moment? Did you know then? Was that the turning point of Chris Ingram going, I think I need to do this?
Definitely, yeah.
Now, we're getting ready. We're getting ready, obviously. You've just mentioned we're getting ready for Wales Rally GB, for you in the Adam. It's in the Vauxhall Adam, of course, not the Opel Adam, because that's in the ERC, but in the Vauxhall Adam in the British Rally Championship. How are we feeling getting ready for that? As you say, there's no pressure on you for championships and stuff like that. You're going to be, obviously, with Vauxhall and Network Q and, obviously, Major Motorsport and things like that. How is all the preparations coming along?
Yeah, it came about pretty last minute deal, but it's going to be really exciting and interesting to work with them for the first time. Maybe lead to something in the future, hopefully. But yeah, prep's been going really well. I've had the flu all week, but I've just been sat in bed watching the videos. So need to get some training done, really, but all good.
You should be careful with the training, mate. If your immune system's been down, You're not going to get any fit. Yeah. You're not going to actually get any fitter now between now and next week anyway. So
no, true.
You just need to look after yourself. So with regards to getting ready, has Elliot got all his pencils nice and sharp?
I should think so. he's only done GBs and retired early on, so I think it's going to be a good chance for him as well.
He did it the year he was in an ST. He was in a bit of a battle with us. That's it. 2 years ago, maybe 3 years ago, actually. In with John Prickshard in his ST, I remember him doing it, and he looked young then, and he looks even younger now. He seems to just get younger, that lad, every time I see him. But still, there you go. Working with Elliot, that's now. Is there anything you can do, you guys, leading up to next week? Is there anything you've been doing? Are you speaking on the phone, or are you watching videos together, or what?
To be honest, we just need a really good recce. Like we saw in the ERC, it's all about the recce and being so focused on that. There's not so much, because we're going to write fresh notes again. So there's not so much we can do, but just focus on getting a really good rally week done.
Fantastic, fantastic. Well, listen, Chris, we're all going to be rooting for you. I'll come and say hello to you in the service park. The very best of luck driving the Vauxhall Adam on Wales Rally GB, and we'll catch up with you again after it, okay?
Top man, thanks for that, Tony. Cheers.
All the best. Cheers, Chris.
Cheers, mate.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast, Wales Rally GB Special.
And our next guest on this little bit of a special feature that we've done on for Wales Rally GB, as I say, I get a bit excited, I still get a bit giddy. It still feels really odd, and I keep saying this every time I interview somebody new, that I'm not getting ready to do the rally, but this was my way of kind of making myself feel better anyway. But a friend of the show, been on before, and a man who's been involved with many Rally GBs, RACs, networking, whatever you want to call it. You can call it whatever you want. But Mark James, welcome back to Absolute Rally.
Hello, Tony. You all right?
I'm all right. As I say, I'm kind of bedding myself in. This is my way of kind of appeasing myself for not physically either doing the rally or working on the rally this year.
I'm getting the feeling that there's withdrawal symptoms happening.
There is, just a little bit. I was okay until people were sending me a message. A guy who very, very kindly helped me out on Rally GB last year, who was one of the tin companies that were on Deeside Industrial Estate. We failed scrutineering on a window tint. And bless him, he came in, I called him, didn't know me from Adam, we called him, I said, look, this is the situation. He went, yeah, not a problem, turned up 15 minutes later. We had literally 20 minutes to get through scrutineering, and he did it and wouldn't take any money off me. And he tweeted me the other day saying, do you need anything for GB? I said, if only, my friend, but sadly we're not there. But that's not one of my favourite memories, but it is a good memory. But what we're trying to do, Mark, as all the other guests so far, I've kind of gave us the, Guy Wilkes, bless him, gave us his best and worst memories of his experiences at Wales Rally GB. We've had Chris Ingram and we've had various other people so far who've shared their thoughts. I just wanted to get somebody like yours. You've been involved with it from different aspects. Mm. So I'm fascinated to hear your best moments or best memories of Wales Rally GB.
Oh, right. Let's start as a spectator. I started spectating when I was about 14, 15. My brother would disappear off days at a time and come back having slept in the car and clearly having had a good time. And it was all a bit of a mystery to me. And in the end, I pestered and pestered, and he took me to a Welsh rally, and I was hooked. And so then, probably when I was about 15, 16, we started going out, and I would join him on these kind of three-day adventures. And I remember I was always the navigator of the family, so I would be the one that would get us, you know, 50 miles across Wales to arrive 10 minutes before the first car. And from memory, I never failed. And, you know, we were flat out in the middle of the night, having our own rally to get to these places. And at those days, there weren't the spectator information and the sort of the user-friendly way of doing it that there is these days. And so you would get a list of grid references on a photocopy of a photocopy of a photocopy passed to you at the motor club. A sort of week before the rally, and you would plot the route, and so you would have your own little rally to get to these places. And brilliant memories, particularly of the early 80s, which gives my age away, but it was the era of Group B, and so you had the Lancias, the Quattros, the RS200s, you know, the Metros. And I remember standing on a hillside above Resolving in the Neath Valley, about 20 minutes away from where I live, and Walter Rall went past in one of the Sport Quattros. It was nighttime, the headlights were glowing, brake discs, you know, amazing memories. And he actually rolled not that far away from where we were standing, and the car ended up at the local Audi dealer, having been recovered, and then Audi Sport had to be reminded that it was there. They'd forgotten their car was in an Audi dealership in Swansea.
Wow. Wow, I'm actually turning up on the forecourt and seeing that there. Yeah, slightly used, but we'll do the deal on it. We'll do
one careful owner never raced or rallied. Oh, hang on.
Funny. Now, from a professional point of view, of course, you followed the World Rally Championship from a TV perspective for many, many years, and obviously got to know the guys and everything else. But there must be GB moments where you were, you know, hairs on the back of the neck, you know, type stuff where you've captured a moment which you're very proud of.
Yeah, I mean, I did radio before I did telly. I mean, I was hugely, hugely fortunate to be part of the Top Gear Rally Report team. So one of the commentary team, along with people like Tiffany Dell, Tony Mason, of course, was around when I started. But I did radio. The first year I did it was 95. And I did the entire World Championship for a guy who's sadly no longer with us, a guy called Greg Strange, who set up iRally. And I went around the world, did the entire championship, and you may remember, Tony, it was a certain Scotsman called Colin McRae who won the title that year, becoming first Britain's first World Rally champion. And I did one of the first interviews with him as world champion.
Wow.
Greg was holding everything together from Chester. I jumped in the car, drove no more than 20 minutes down the road. There was a sort of final splash and dash service in a car park, I seem to remember, off one of the main roads. I went in there, amazing scenes as he came in. Now, obviously, probably Tony Mason would have stuck a mic under his nose at the stage finish, but this was 10 minutes after he'd come out of the last stage. Euphoria, the whole team was cheering, and I managed to get a couple of questions in. And then later on that day, I sort of sat down with him and did a proper interview, and that was the one that went out on sort of the world service and across the whole sort of radio spectrum. But it's that interview, that moment in the car park, with everybody cheering and managing to get a couple of questions with Colin, that is just, it still makes the hairs on the back of my neck go up.
Do you know what? Listening to that, I'm getting the hairs on the back of the neck stuff now. Mm. But we all know Colin, or certainly Colin's interview style towards the end, sadly, of his life and his mainstream rally career, if you like. Obviously, he was dipping in and out towards the end of rally. Mm. But back then, he was such a, you know, I remember seeing something with David Richards who was talking about, you know, he wasn't great in front of the camera and he wasn't great with a microphone, so we made him this kind of action hero, you know, with, you know, using images of him jet skiing and things like that. What was that shy, retiring Scotsman like when he'd just become World Rally Champion?
He was, I think the emotions hadn't quite hit then. And I think then it kind of dawned when he got back to Chester and there were those amazing scenes doing the donuts in front of the grandstand. I mean, massive smile on his face. You know, he'd had 3 days of, 4 days, whatever it was, of tension. And he'd, you know, he'd had to knock things back in place with a fence post, that memorable interview with Tony on the Top Gear team, sort of saying, "Aye, no problem, Tony." Bang, bang, as he's knocking 7 bells out of this suspension upright. But that moment, brilliant interview. It was just, you know, there wasn't going to be a difficult question. I wasn't trying to catch him out, and it was, you know, congratulations, you're Britain's first World Rally Champion. How does it feel, kind of thing. Yeah, Colin could be, I won't say difficult to interview. He was quite sort of shy. He was told from quite an early age not to trust the media because obviously his dad had been caught out a few times. And so he was quite wary, but there were journalists he trusted. And I'd like to think that I was one of those because I was there in the good times and the bad, you know, relaying his words back to the folks back home. And, you know, 95 was the first time that certainly the BBC had covered anything other than the world the RAC as was in any great detail, and there am I popping up every hour, telling people what Colin and Richard Burns were doing on all these rallies. It was a great time.
Wow, but I suppose 95 being there was, I suppose, probably, obviously we had Richard a few years after that, but the first one and being there, that first moment in the Chester race course, kind of image and stuff like that. I don't think you can top that, can you? I think that's kind of, it's, I guess that's where everybody, I think everybody was kind of sucked in at that point. And I seem to remember rallying going through this massive spike of interest and people talking about it who wouldn't normally talk about it.
No, and I'm being selfish. I'd like to think that the stuff we were doing on radio was helping because it was raising awareness, not just of Colin, but of the championship as a whole. But you're right. When Richard won the title in the early 2000s, I was doing telly, and we'd been told that we'd lost the contract. So I suppose the BBC's heart really wasn't in it, to be honest. We were kind of, you know, honour-bound to cover the championship, but it was the last round. I'll keep my thoughts to myself about the way the BBC'd been treated, although we have touched on it in the past.
Yeah.
Richard won the title, and it was all a bit flat. It certainly wasn't the kind of same euphoria that there was when Colin won it. And then when Petter Solberg won it, Phil Mills and I were friends. Phil came to my wedding in the States, and I barely saw him. You know, that was my... So I never got the chance to say well done until much later.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Well, all being well, Phil is going to be another person who's going to be joining us to give us his favourite moments of Rally GB as well on this podcast. So I wonder which one that'll be.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's an easy one for Phil to remember.
Listen, Mark, as I say, I really do appreciate your time. As everybody, we're kind of dipping in and out with everybody and on their thoughts on their favourite moments. But yeah, I think so far, out of everybody that's been on, I think Phil's possibly the only person who could top yours.
Brilliant. That's nice of you to say.
Happy days. Mark, we'll catch you up soon. And yeah, we'll look forward to having you. I think there's got to be a position for a guest host in the not too distant future for you.
Oh, you're on. Definitely.
Yeah,
let me know.
Let's get you on. Thanks, Mark James, for joining us once again on Absolute Rally.
This is Absolute Rally. Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 44 1904 766787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
As part of our Wales Rally GB feature, as I say, I keep on introducing different people for this little feature, and this time round we've got Oshan Price, who is now the DMAC Drive Fiesta Championship World Champion, I suppose. Is that the full title, Oshan? Have I done it justice?
Yeah, well, World sounds good, but yeah, we're Drive DMAC Fiesta Champion this year, so yeah, pretty awesome feeling.
And I was just about to say, you're a young man who's been around for such a long time, but you only look about 12. I have to say that I feel quite old every time I look at you. But you've always had a smile on your face. You've always battled on and everything else. But this was the first pop at this, wasn't it, as well? You know, obviously, you know, to do it first time round must have been... Was it a two-year plan, or was it always kind of, you know, we've got to do it in year one?
And to be honest, we sort of set out just to do the first two. Initially, we only had the budget to do the first two rallies, and then from our, you know, strong performances there, you know, we won in Portugal, and we were leading in Poland as well before things didn't quite go to plan, but still finished second. And sort of the interest came in then from sponsorship side of things and, you know, partners, and it sort of enabled us to continue with the season. And you know, it was the first time that people really believed in me from a financial point of view, other than the family. So that sort of just spurred me on a bit, just to push on and speed the process up and, win the title.
There's phenomenal strength, isn't there, at the moment from rally drivers out of Wales. There always has been a bit of history, to say the least. More so with co-drivers, I think, but other than Gwyndaff. But obviously, there just seems to be, obviously, there's yourself. There's obviously what Elvin's done this year as well. Obviously, you know, Tom's been knocking on the door of BRC this year. What is the, what's in the water over there, mate?
I couldn't tell you, but I know we we store it and we sell it back to the English. So
great answer. But I tell you what was really great to see as well is that obviously you secured the championship, and pretty much within 48 hours it was announced you had an R5 car for Rally GB. Was that a deal breaker for you securing the championship? Did you have to secure the championship in order for that to happen, or was that going to happen anyway? How did that come about?
To be honest, we'd been quietly working on it for a while. Things weren't quite going as well as we'd hoped with Rally GB, so we kind of we did a bit, and then we sort of turned our focus into Spain and left sort of Rally GB to sort of, you know, to one side for a bit, because obviously the Drive DMAC Championship was our priority. So we had great help initially with Rally GB, with Hills Ford and Alfira Financial Services, and sort of from then on in, then a few more jumped on the bandwagon, and yeah, in the sort of the last couple of days, really, it's all sort of signed and sealed, and yeah, we're going to be at the rally, which is going to be a great feeling, especially off the back of our championship win.
Fantastic. So who's running the car for you?
The car will be run by MH Motorsport, but it's actually Adapter Motorsports car, so the car, it's actually Mads Osberg's own car.
Wow. No pressure then. Now you've previously drove an R5 car on Rally GB. That was 2 years ago now, wasn't it?
Yeah, 2014. Yeah.
And I remember it was a phenomenal pace that you set as well, by the way. What are the hopes for GB this time round, mate? Is it just purely to just go and enjoy it, or is this in preparation for next year?
There's an element of both in there, to be honest. We've had a sort of a season with a lot of pressure on us to deliver and to try and win the championship. So part of me saying, you know, we're just coming home to do a rally, which is quite nice in a big car, and a lot of home support. This can be, you know, just go there and enjoy it. But on the other hand, we've got some serious competition in WRC2, which is, you know, one of the strongest events of the year. So we're just going to have to use this, really, as a bit of food for thought for the winter, and see how this goes, and see where that pace is at, and use that then, and after this event, and see what we need to work on over the winter for the new year, and for ready for when we jump in the DMAC car next year.
Well, hopefully when we speak this time next year, Rally GB 2016 will be one of your favourite memories of Rally GB. Now, we're doing this feature. We've had a few esteemed guests on, and I wanted to ask you, what's your favourite moment of a Rally GB? Whether it's Rally GB with Network QRAC, whatever you want to call it, what has been your favourite moment from the event?
To be honest, there's nothing that comes close to 2014, you know, first time in a four-wheel drive car, let alone an R5 car. And we'd only done a couple of K's testing. We went into the first day running at the back of the field in non-priority, and if we'd have been running in WRC2, we'd have actually had a fastest time on the first day. So wow. Take that into account. We were dead chuffed with that. And if it wasn't for me knocking the tyre off a rim, I think we would have finished well inside the top 15, top 13. So we even with that, we still finished 17th, I think. So, that was pretty special.
I think we've been debating with all, we've had different, you know, we've had Mark James on, of course, who's covered WRC for a while. We're going to have Phil Mills, who I think is still probably going to have the best Rally GB memory, I think, come the end of all these little interviews we're doing. But yours is probably a very close second from everybody we've had on so far. So listen, Oshan, we do appreciate your time. We wanted to congratulate you on your championship. And will you come back and talk to us maybe a little bit more in depth with the other guys, with Jack and Rye when they're back with me, and we'll have a proper catch up then?
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. Yeah,
Oshan, listen, we'll see you around the service park. I wish you the very best of luck, and again, many, many congratulations on your championship.
Thank you very much, Stone.
This is the Absolute Rally Podcast, Wales Rally GB special,
and our next guest on this special Wales Rally GB feature that we're deciding to do for Absolute Rally this week is a man who's always been in the know, and he's a great guest. I love having him on, but it's going to be great to try and condense Julian Porter down to 10 minutes, because normally when we do 10 minutes, it turns into an hour and a half, but it's always great and it's always entertaining. But for this purpose, and for this purpose only, Jules, we've got you on for your favourite Wales Rally GB moment.
Right, yeah, well, it's nice to be back on, and I will, hopefully my story won't be massively long, so that's fine too. As long as I've only got to give one story. Like you, Tony, there's endless stories, there's countless stories and different memories and things like that, but I actually remember 12 months ago getting a website ringing me with exactly the same question on exactly the same day, the day I was travelling down to Wales ITV, which is what I'm doing after this call. So, and I sat there and thought, what's it going to be? What's it going to be? And strangely, probably my standout memory or strangest story that kind of happened was actually on Ricky for the 94, Network Q it was.
Would have been Network Q, yeah.
Yeah, and I was in the event. I'd won the entry fee by winning the National F2 Championship, the National Rally Series. I was F2 champion, free entry. Right, we're going to the Network Queue. Me and my little Foxhole Nova and my mates and everything like that. And we basically, privateer effort, a bit like yours is on the British Rally Championship, kind of real hands-on pumps and things like that. And
yep.
We went and did the recce, and there was a stage in Hampstead Forest. And I can't remember what day the recce was, but basically, it was the last stage of the day of the recce on that day. And from then, you move down to do the stately home stages and everything like that. And the recce car covered in mud and everything after a day of recce. And my house is about 7 or 8 miles from the end of Hampstead Forest stage. So we had a team meeting. The co-driver was going to meet the service crew and go through all the service schedules and all that kind of stuff. And while they were doing all that, I was going to clean the recce car with the power washer from the garage. And I got the car jacked up, wheels off again, all the mud out of it. You know what I mean? Done a couple of days in recce. And out of the corner of my eye, I spied an Escort Cosworth Group N recce car parked on our garage floor. I think that's a strange car to be parked. It's like, because we kind of come off slightly route to get to our garage. And I thought, oh, that's strange. They must be lost. So I walked over to see if they needed any help, me being the local. Ari Vatterman of Fabrizio Pons sat in this recce car. And Ari gets out and he goes, how are you doing? And he then discovered that he'd seen my recce car with the number on the side of it and everything. Oh, you're doing the rally? Yeah, I'm doing the rally, Ari Vatterman. Yeah, I am doing the rally. All right, what you're driving? Couple of minute conversation with what I was doing. I knew everything he was doing. I didn't need to ask him, but he was on to know what I was doing. And he then said, so we've lost our mechanic. He said, and the phone service is really patchy. He says, can we stay here until he gets hold of us on the phone? Because there's phone service here. Oh, yeah, not a problem. And he went, he says, there's nowhere where I can get a cup of coffee, is there? And I went, yeah, you can. I said, this is my family's garage. I said, and that's the family house, isn't it? Because it's attached to the side of the garage. And he goes, oh, right. Is there anybody in the house? And I said, yep, there's somebody in there. I said, my mum's in there with my co-driver and all the mechanics. I said, just go in the front door, knock on the door, go in. I said, and they'll be in the living room. And he, so I walked off, I'm still cleaning the car. And obviously, I then wasn't a witness of what happened within the house, but I then got told about half an hour later. There was a knock on the door. My mum got up to go out to the door. Before she could get there, Ari Vatterman had stood in the kitchen and then introduced himself. Hi, I'm Ari Vatterman. Julian sent me in to get a cup of coffee. And it's kind of like just the strangest thing in the world. And then Fabrizio came in, and basically we had half an hour, 40 minutes with Ari and Fabrizio. All the mechanics thought it was great. My mum thought it was great. And in those days, as you'll remember, Tony, it was service any way you can after every stage.
Yeah.
And we already had the Vauxhall Works team coming. We already had the Shell Scholarship Peugeot team coming. Fabrizio Pontes, there's not a chance we could service here before going into Hampstead on that morning. I said, yeah, that's not a problem. And Ari went, I'm only coming if I can have a bacon sandwich on the morning. And Ari Vatterman had his pre-Hampstead Rally breakfast, which is a bacon and sausage sandwich, and a cup of coffee in our kitchen. We have photographs to prove it as well, of him having a coffee and everything in our kitchen before he headed off to Hampstead. So it is rally-related, but not actually on the event. It was a recce thing of Ari Vatterman introducing himself to everybody who they all knew exactly who he was,
yeah,
before he kind of even started introducing himself. So, yeah, and I think that shows the type of people we have in the sport of it is the privateer can mix. And this is what they say, isn't it? amateur drivers, privateer, when they do the World Rally Championship, they can drive the same piece of the road as the world champions and compare themselves, whether they're in the same car or not, they can compare themselves. And that was definitely a situation where World Rally styles mixed it with privateers for sure.
That's just, that would have been, I'm just trying to think, would you have been in the RED Escort? Toshiba
it was
one.
It was a silver and red one, Red Bull sponsorship on it, a silver and red one.
Wow.
Escort Cosworth.
Wow. Wow, 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 wow.
So, yeah.
There you go. Now, that's a recce story. You must, obviously, you've done the rally. How many times have you done GB?
I did three times, 94, 96, 97. 96 was F2 round only.
Yeah.
Finished 12th overall, third in Group M, third privateer. Really should have been way inside the top 10, but I went off like it does. It was that really snowy year. Year Schwartz won it.
Yeah.
And I went off in one of the clearer stages, which wasn't a problem. I followed Louise Aitken Walker in, so she'd softened my blow. And when I went and straightened the back of her Honda, or sideways into the Honda, which kind of meant I didn't go fully in. And Louise and Claire Moore and the spectators kind of getting us out. And I just about got it back onto the road. Only after about a minute. Next car, Gavin Cox, slid on the same bit of ice as us and hit me, shoved me into a different hole, and then he came in behind me. So they had to get him out and then me out before I could carry on. Basically, I was in there about 6.5 minutes in total. And yeah, it's all ifs and buts. You're not 6.5 minutes off, and I think I'd have been about 6 overall, which, yeah, it wasn't a full world rally, but it would have been nice. It would have been nice. But
absolutely.
Funniest GB rally story would be 94 in the Nova. And we broke an engine mounting in the Kielder stages. We didn't really notice it until that night. And then it was down into like, we broke it in the spectator stages. It maybe cracked in Kielder. Anyway, it started to come to pieces to the engine mounting in the Welsh stages. And we didn't have a spare one. And we were like, this is not good. We're struggling to change gear and everything. Engine was resting on the sump guard. And it was like, oh, this is not good. This is not good. Atkinson's Motorsport from Kendall. They called them. They had a proper Group A one for the Nova. That was being sent down during the day for us. Someone was driving it down for us for the final service, but we weren't going to get through the day with the one we had. And we chased cars in them days, and our two mechanics went whizzing past a second-hand car garage, which happened to have a box all Nova GSI on the front of it. And basically, half an hour later, that box all Nova GSI didn't have an engine mounting on it. They'd gone in to inquire about the car, and they'd we're interested in this box. Oh, it's a lovely car. The salesman said, lovely car. It's not actually the car we want. It's the engine mapping that we want. And the guy went, what's the name of the engine? We're in the rally. We're doing the rally. He's doing really well. He's doing really well as our driver. I actually was reading my class, so they weren't telling lies. He's doing really well. He's doing really well. But got broken engine mounting. If we give you 30 quid, can we have the engine mounting off it? So they basically did a deal, not on the car, but just on the engine mounting. And they paid over the odds for the engine mounting, but it meant we could fit it on the next road section before. So we just had a temporary one, like a standard one for half a day, and then we got the real one in that night. But that's probably that's again, that is.
The beauty of the rally.
Rallying.
Yeah, it's the beauty of rallying, and stuff like that still goes on, I think, today. Yeah. You know, we've had to beg, borrow and steal on road sections. Not quite steal, I should possibly take that statement out, we've definitely convinced people that we've needed bits and pieces. But from a coverage point of view, mate, obviously, I've done GB three or four times like yourself, but from a coverage point of view, what's your favourite moments from covering the event?
From reporting wise,
yeah.
My favourite. There's all sorts, because a lot of the times, as you know, we have world champions covered there. Then we've had obviously 2005 when Beef was killed, which is horrendous. Probably the funniest, bizarre story from reporting it was going into the back of my Heron, Port Talbot stage, can't think what it's called now, but I think it's been called Port Talbot at one point. Stage which is in Margan Park, the stage which finishes in the park, but it started at the other end. And to get into it, you have to go through like the back of a village, up through the Forester Gate, up to the gatehouse, and then it started on the hairpins up the road. And I was following Petr Solberg, come to the end of the previous stage, got a broken driveshaft, got to go. Petr was out in second place. This is kind of a story we needed to follow. Out onto the road section, away. Chasing the Petr up the road section, get into the forest, and the marshal's trying to stop us from getting in to the stage. Even though we weren't going to drive into the stage, we just wanted to film Petr changing or fixing the car in some shape or form. And the marshal's trying to stop us. We don't stop, we just keep going. Pull over behind Petr. He's working on the car, we're filming it. Petr's then happy, the wheels are back on. We start to do an interview, and with that, just as I'm kind of like asked the question, as Petr's about to answer it, a marshal and a policeman rock up and basically try to arrest me in the interview. And kind of like, you went through a roadblock. You're not allowed to do that. So, and Petr had to basically tell him, no, this is WRC TV. The people who film all the rallies and everything, they were filming. I told him to follow me. He said, probably my fault more than anything. And this policeman and this marshal, they weren't having any of it. Anyway, after about 10 minutes, and we did the interview first, and then we had to kind of discuss and debate with the marshal and the policeman of whether I was going to get arrested or not, and have to get Andrew Keller on the phone and people like that to kind of like prove that we were allowed into where we were and everything. So, yeah, mid-interview, policeman goes, excuse me, sir. You know, I'm interrupting here. We need to have a word. I'm like, oh my word, I can't believe it. I just thought it was highly amusing.
Fantastic.
I didn't at the time, but it was funny now.
Well, what's quite nice is that to finish off from that, yeah, on next person we're going to have on in this little feature that we're doing, we're actually going to have Phil Mills. So I'm going to ask Phil about that when we get Phil on next show. So
there
Phil,
was parked just at the gate out on the right hand side, a policeman and a marshal came up. I was like, oh my word, I can't believe this. So yeah, so that's it. So three little stories there from different times of competing, reporting, and a recce.
Fantastic. Now, listen, before we let you go, we've got to ask you, is this going to be another walkover for Monsieur Ogier on GB, or can you see some of our home drivers possibly upsetting the apple cart?
As we say here right now, I've been through the stages. Sunday stage is very, very, very muddy, which will suit, in theory, who's first on the road, which won't be Ogier at that time unless he's had a disaster, because it'll be reverse order. But Friday and Saturday stages are all in good condition, organised and a great job. But at the minute, not a lot of mud, not a lot of slime. And there is slime, there's 6 or 7 days of it in Hafren, but over the loop, it's not really that much. But it's at the minute, it's very, very even, I think, depending on where you are. Because as you know, the more cars go over, it will make it messy. Because we're just going through in a forward right. So Chris Meek and Craig Green running that bit further back. They're not going to be, if it remains stable, it's not a road that cleans. The roads don't clean. They are beautiful clean anyway. There's no loose gravel. So Roger is not going to be at a disadvantage being first on the road, whether it's dry or not dry. In theory, he'll make the marks for everybody else. He'll start to rust it up for everybody else. So, and if it was to get really wet and really muddy, it would, again, favour Ogier. So Ogier has a lot of things stacked in his favour. Yeah, Chris and Craig have a lot of home support in their favour as well. But, it could be Ogier's first gravel win of the year, which is quite amazing when you think we're going into the penultimate round of the championship.
That's going to be, you can tell that's going to be a quiz question in a few years' time. That's going to be definitely be a quiz question in a few years' time, isn't it? But still, there you go. Listen, Julian, thank you so much for joining us on this little feature. As I say, we are going to have you back towards the end of the year, and we'll do a little bit of review of the year as we did last year, which was ace. And have a great, safe one, mate, and hopefully I'll catch you on the stages.
Yep, thank you very much. This is the Absolute Rally Podcast.
Team Coordinate, your perfect travel partner for all your European, Manx and Irish motorsport travel. Whether you're a competitor, marshal or a motorsport fan, we have the connections and discounts available for ferry travel to and from the UK. Team Coordinate, we can cater for individuals, teams or group bookings. Working with organisers of race, rally and classic touring events, we take away the hassle of travel with bikes, cars, trailers and trucks, accompanied or unaccompanied. Team Coordinate. Call Dane or Donna now on 441904-766-787 or email us on info@teamcoordinate.com. This is Absolute Rally.
The final section of Absolute Rally is with the legend that is Mr. Phil Mills. Phil, thank you for joining us on the podcast this week.
Great, it's good to be here. Legend, though, I always was believed to be a legend, you have to be dead. So I'm actually quite glad that I'm a legend and still living, you know.
Legend, then. Legend. Should we go with legend? Is that a safe? Is that a safe version of legend? We'll go with that. We'll go okay. with that. Yeah, but yes. we've done a bit of a special this week, Phil, of kind of favourite memories of Rally GB, and we've had people like Mark James on who interviewed Colin for the first time when he first won his championship, and we've had Ryan giving his thoughts as well, and Jack Benyon, even though he's still in short trousers, he still has memories of what he's done as well. But we thought there's got to be a pinnacle to all this. There's got to be a pinnacle to all this. And we came to the conclusion that a proud Welshman being crowned the world champion surely has to be the pinnacle of a Rally GB memory.
Well, that's right. I mean, to win your home event, I think, you know, if you're Spanish and you're in Spain, it's special. And to be a Welshman and win it in Wales was very special. But to be crowned world champion and win in the rally in Wales was a double whammy. And it was obviously a very, very sweet moment for me, as well as it was for Petter, but to do it at home as well. I think the year we won the world championship, we'd forgotten that we actually won the rally as well. We were just so brought, you know, enthralled in the whole thing, really. But it's a very special feeling to win your home event and the championship all at the same time. Yes,
this may sound like a daft question, and I know it is, and I can't believe I'm going to ask it. Is that your favourite Wales Rally G memory?
Well, no, not really.
Okay, all right, all fair dues.
The first win, I think, were the first home win in 2001. 2002. That was obviously a very, very special moment because, you know, you'd won your home event and you'd won a WRC event. You were standing there, all these Welsh flags were going, there's Welsh flags being thrown at us everywhere. That was quite an exciting moment. The World Championship win was so tied up in euphoria, it's actually, I can't remember much about it because it was all a bit of a whirlwind and we were whisked off here, there and everywhere, and the family was down, and it was just all a bit dizzy, really. I wish I could just revisit that moment and do it in slow motion, really.
Do you know what? I don't make it to me. I feel quite old even saying this because I remember it quite clearly. But you just imagine the kind of what we've got access to these days: iPads, iPhones. You know, people can record anything, and you just think those moments. You would so love to revisit them.
Well, it's not that long ago, you know, we did have mobile phones and hot and cold running water and flush toilets and things, even though it was in 2003, you know, so it wasn't that long ago.
But, maybe it was just my TV.
It was all recorded at the time, but a slow motion revisit of it, I would pay to do that again. But again, you know, you're never going to repeat that moment, so we just enjoy the memories that we've got, really.
What year was your first Rally GB? What year did you do it first?
I actually did it first in 1990. It was my first WRC, it was the RAC rally then. Started in Harrogate. I did it with Graham Middleton in a Group N Sapphire Cosworth. It was quite a big moment, really. We were leading Group N going into Dalby, and we broke the suspension strut. The rest is history, really, but that was my first attempt. And it was a huge stepping stone to come from national rallying, BTRDA. It was the Mintex Championship then. And to step into this world championship, it was incidentally the first year of a full recce. So we did a full recce, which was quite something then, you know, to do a 5-day recce in the UK.
Wow.
It was all quite a big experience. But that was 1990, and of course 23 years later, I actually won the event and won the title. So, yeah, it goes back a long way. But again, so, you know, we did have hot and cold running water even then as well.
But there's but the coverage of that's only on Betamax, I'm led to believe.
It probably is, actually. I wouldn't like to comment on that, yeah.
But did you do it with Mark as well in the F2 days?
Yes, we did many with Mark. We did with Nissan in the Nissan F2. I think it was 95 and 96 and 97, I think, we did it in the Nissan. So, yes, we did quite a few after that, but 1990 was the first. Yes, but many in the Nissan. That was great days as well. And we did the famous one in 1996 when it wasn't in the World Championship. But when Armin Schwartz came to do it in the Toyota and there was snow up to the bonnet, and we did that in a two-wheel drive car and finished fourth overall, which was quite a big experience. Again, a very underrated result from Mark, really, to finish fourth in a World Championship event in a two-wheel drive car on solid snow with no studs was quite an achievement, and I don't think he ever got the sort of recognition for that result, really.
Wow. It's not until you put it like that you kind of realise, it was. It's giant killing stuff, really, isn't it?
It was. It was a tremendous result, you know, just for the team and obviously for Mark and myself and everything. And it sort of got swallowed up because it wasn't a round of the World Championship. It was a rest year or something they used to call it then. But it was a tremendous result, you know. One more place, you know, we've been on the podium and it was close, but we had a great time. I can remember getting out of the car somewhere up in Dalby and we couldn't stand up. It was about half a metre of snow, which was frozen solid to the floor. It really was a tough winter that year.
Wow. Yeah. What can you make of the event these days, Phil? Is it so watered down? Because, we spoke about this at the top of the podcast. You know, for someone like me, I've done it three or four times, and it's a big jump. Like what you were saying before, from doing BTRDA rallies, effectively for me, it's like doing five BTRDA rallies, six BTRDA rallies over the course of 3 days. Now, to me, it's like, still like a marathon, but obviously to you guys, it's so watered down now.
Yeah. Well, it is watered down from what it was. I mean, the days are still 6 a.m. till 11 p.m. or whatever they are. So the days are still long. You haven't quite got the mileage that you used to. You haven't got servicing on the side of the road, which you used to. So you have to keep trundling back each time to the service park. So that's where all the time goes, is back and forth from the stages to main service areas. So, yes, it is a little bit watered down, but they're still big, long days. I'm not want to mention names, but if you look on the Sunday of any World Championship rally, somebody who's done very well on the first 2 days starts to drop off, which is like a fitness thing. The fatigue starts to set in, and normally those drivers on a Sunday morning are absolutely nowhere and haven't been somewhere quite healthy on the Friday. So you can soon see who the fit drivers are and the ones who are not so fit, but that comes into play on the Sunday. So fatigue, you know, it's still part of the business. It's still part of the game, and it is very tiring. Even though you're doing road sections, it's still tiring. You've still got to maintain concentration and time schedules and everything else. But yes, watered down to what it was, but it's still a tough one, you know.
It's interesting you say, obviously, fitness is such a big thing now. People do tend to kind of, you know, there's things called selfies, Phil. People like to take selfies in the gym these days, and one or two rally drivers I've noticed do it. Not me, because I don't call myself a rally driver. But there's the big thing about fitness now. But fitness must have been, it's always been there, hasn't it?
It's always been there to a certain extent. I mean, if you look back to the Group B days and the pictures of Tina Salonen smoking a cigarette in the car and the Roger Clarks having a beer at the end of leg and things like that, you know, absolutely brilliant. That's how I was brought up. But now it seems like any sport, it's almost an extreme fitness regime with a bit of rallying thrown in between. So it's gone complete switch, if you like. You know, you can imagine having a pint of beer at the end of leg one now. It just wouldn't happen. The guys are drug tested now every night or whenever they can be. So they've got to be on their toes, really. But, you know, yes, the fitness part of it, But I suppose, if you like, I mean, you know, there is a gym culture now anyway, which there wasn't there 30 years ago anyway. So, for fitness is a huge part of it. It's stamina, you know, you have to do a lot of endurance training. We used to go out for big, big bike rides to just help maintain concentration over long periods. But now, if you look at the Ogiers and Sebastian Loebs, if you like, back another era, you know, these guys are extremely fit. They train very hard, mainly in private when nobody's looking, but they are very, very fit. I don't know where they would be against another athlete from another discipline, but I would say that they would be, you know, right up there with the rest of them.
Wow, wow.
Well, that brings... we should get some Olympians and stick them in the gym just for a laugh and see where they are, really.
Well, you know, funny enough, there's a guy who did some rallies with us this year, and he's doing GB this year, Guy Atherton, who's a downhill mountain biker for Red Bull.
Yes, I know,
and we had a few dices with him throughout the year, and just I'll be honest with you, Phil, I'm gonna have a little bit of a man crush. That man is a machine. That's the only way I can describe it. That man is an absolute machine. And then you watch some of the videos of what he's doing on mountain bikes and some of those endurance events and stuff like that, and it's just like, that's just fitness at another level. It's just completely different world.
Correct. And but anyway, like I said, you know, if most of these guys are training in private, all of them are lucky enough to have gyms at home and things like this. Extremely fit people. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Now, brings us quite nicely round to this year. There's a couple of young Welshmen who are going to be in an R5. There's one in particular that's not going to be there, of course, Elvin, who could still technically secure WRC2. But a little bit of disappointment not seeing Elvin out there.
Gutted, to be honest with you. It's the only word I can use, really. It's passing his house, and it literally is passing his house. I just can't believe that, you know, we couldn't find a car or get a deal together to get him out there, really. It's just bizarre. He's done 15 events this year. I must say, at the start of the year, he didn't have one event, and he ended up doing 15 and winning 8 of them outright. So he has actually had a very good year when he was looking forward to nothing at this time last year. But, you know, he is missing his home event, which just seems bizarre. And that will actually tell next year as well, because when you miss an event and you go back the following year to it, you do feel quite sort of naked, if you like, and unprepared, because you haven't done the stages at full speed. So he will suffer from that. Even if he's back in a big car next year, he can't be expected, you know, to find that last 1 or 2% because he's missed this year, really. And I hope people don't forget that this time next year, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It'd be good to see how Oshan does. I don't know whether you've been keeping up to speed with Oshan Price this year.
Absolutely. We follow their progress stage by stage, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
Big fan of anybody, not just Welsh, but British. And the result system are analysed stage by stage for all the Brits. It doesn't matter what class they're in or what car they're in, you know. But a big fan of Elvin. I've done a lot of work with Elvin out on events in the WRC. This year and last year, and you get to know a guy and the way he ticks and the way he thinks and the way he works, and it's quite extraordinary the amount of work that he puts in behind the scenes. And again, he does it in private, he doesn't shout about it, but he is putting an extreme amount of work in, and I can honestly say more than we ever did. He is trying exceptionally hard. It's just bizarre that he's not out on his home event.
Absolutely. It is a great pity. It is a great pity. And I know Craig quite well as well, of course, who sits alongside Elvin, and I know he's equally gutted. I only found out the other day, and I texted him the other day, and I was like, I'm just gutted for you. And that I just got one word back, which is, was gutted. You know, just genuinely. Yeah. And you just got a feel for them, really. You've just got a feel for them.
We just have to move on and see what we can do, you know.
Absolutely. Before I let you go, Phil, it's the obvious question. Winners on Wales Rally GB, is it going to be Ogier? Is he going to get... Do you know what? It feels really odd to say this. It would be his first gravel win this year.
Yeah, I know. It's difficult because, you know, let's face it, the top five drivers are separated by a few tenths, really. Chris, I fancy if he can keep it on the road... Chris, I really do fancy for this event. He's very comfortable with the event. He's very comfortable with the car. He's just in a very comfortable position at the moment. I do fancy Chris a lot for this event, but you can't discount any of the Volkswagens. They're all up there. Lakvala has got a tremendous record on this event. Ogier obviously will be in a class up there, separated by tenths. If I've got me fiver to put on Ladbrokes, I'll put it on Chris.
Good man, good man. And we'll take that all day. I don't know what odds you get on it, but I think they'd be quite short. But there you go. That would be a bit of a record as well. Be the first Brit to win three WRC rounds. God, for how long? It's got to be 20 years, hasn't it?
No. Well, it all depends if you're classing drivers or Brits, really, because I did it in 2004.
Ah.
So it all depends what you class as a Brit, a driver, or a co-driver, really. But
I was in 2004. Well, there you go. I was going on drivers, and I just realised that potentially I've just insulted you at the end of this piece, so I apologise.
Well, you've insulted every co-driver in the UK, really. Yeah, you did quite a good one there.
And on that bombshell, that's the end of our chat with Phil. We do appreciate the download, folks. Keep spreading the love. Absolute_Rally on Twitter and facebook.com/AbsoluteRally.